Hello, and welcome to Business Talk. Hi, I'm Chris Kellogg from the Kellogg Crew Morning Show on 94.7 WMAS. And I'd like to introduce the host of this week's episode. He's the editor of Business West. Here's Joe Bednar.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Business Talk. We have a great show for you today. I'm so excited to talk to Chris Freeman. He's the executive director of the Parlor Room Collective. And really happy to have you here on Business Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. I know you've got a pretty broad background as a musician. Tell me about your career in music and then how you found yourself involved with the Parlor Room in Northampton.
Yeah, so I was in a band called Parsons Field, which from around 2012 till 2022. We recorded four or five albums on Signature Sounds Recordings, which is the record label that started the Parlor Room back in 2012. In fact, my band was the third show, I think, ever to play at the at the Parlor Room, and that was one of our first times playing in Northampton. And it became a really special place to us and to a lot of musicians to have a. It was technically a for-profit enterprise with for a long time at the Parlor Room, but it was always run with a mission-based approach and to putting artists forward and really just making the point of it was to just be a great music venue and that celebrated artists. So it was a special place to me. So when I moved to Northampton in 2021, I joined up with Signature Sounds and the Parlor Room to be booking the room, booking the bands that were coming through, coming out of COVID. So that was how I first got involved.
And how did you become the executive director of what became known as the Parlor Room Collective?
So in that time, we were looking at different ways of kind of keeping a. It was, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty coming out of COVID for all sorts of live event venues and all different kinds of businesses. So we were kind of looking at what the future held for a space that. It's a lot of work to put on as many shows as they have been putting on for the 10 years prior to that, without a ton of profit. So kind of looking forward on it, it needed a new model, especially coming out of the pandemic. And so that's when we, decided to transition, the space to a nonprofit. And I had seen similar nonprofits be successful all over the country when I was on tour, places like Club Passim in Boston or Cafe Lena in Saratoga Springs are both really small venues that celebrate musicians and create an ecosystem, sort of the foundation, of a larger musical ecosystem in a given area. Both of them also had educational components to what they were doing. And so we saw that model work not only in those venues, but in countless others, dozens others across the country where I had played. And so it always felt to me like the Parlor Room was run with the same kind of approach. And so we decided to transition it to be a nonprofit, really with just the hope of maintaining such an important place to both musicians and the community, and hopefully expanding into the educational stuff, which we have done as well. But that was early 2022 that we transitioned to the nonprofit.
And I have to tell you, I love the Parlor Room. I go a few times a year. I love the intimacy of the place. And I guess it's a similar intimacy that people have experienced throughout the decades at the Iron Horse. So after that, obviously very famous venue was shuttered a few years ago. What drew you to want to bring that back to life, and how did you guys initially go about doing that?
So I'd been going to the Iron Horse since I was in middle school. I grew up in the Hartford area, down in Connecticut, and my dad would bring me up to shows at the Iron Horse because in Connecticut, there really isn't a venue, and especially back then, there was no venue that was bringing in the kinds of bands that played the Iron Horse and really that played in Northampton. Yeah. There were the big country shows at the Meadows and Dave Matthews Band and things like that. But if you wanted to go see the bands that were out there really making a living touring. You had to kind of travel to Providence or up to Northampton, so I had come to the Iron Horse a bunch of times before, and I had seen it had been sort of brought into my life as this legendary space where you can go see shows. So even when I was in college, I was coming up to. I went to UConn in Eastern Connecticut, but we would come up to the Iron Horse to see some of the greatest shows I've ever seen before. Mm. So once I moved to Northampton, you know, that was not, it wasn't directly because of the Iron Horse that I moved here, but it certainly was indirectly because of the music scene, both Signature Sounds, the Iron Horse, the Calvin, all of the fact that there could be such an amazing ecosystem of venues in a relatively small town is what really made me want to move to the Valley and live in Northampton. So to see it shuttered and to be walking by it each day, and I was looking in the windows trying to see what it looked like in there. It was sad for me, and it was something that was clearly on the minds of everybody who was coming into the Parlor Room, both artists and audience members who were seeing shows. Everybody would be talking about, like, what's going on with the Iron Horse, what's going to happen with it. So I knew that it was something that I wanted to see open again, and I didn't necessarily think that it would be our nonprofit that was doing it, but I just started asking around to different people who had been involved in the Iron Horse before and sort of getting the lay of the land on it. And I noticed that there was incredible community support for the space. And there was just a groundswell of activity that surrounded and enthusiasm that surrounded it any time that it was brought up. So I was able to get in touch with the previous owner, and we had a few meetings, and it was, in overall, our interests were aligned in wanting to see a venue that has changed and shifted through the years, but the constant has always been just incredible musicians coming through. The music was the center of why it was great. You know, it was a legendary venue. Despite the fact that there were only two bathrooms, and despite some you know, clear things that could have made the space better, and so I didn't really know what was going to happen, and I didn't really have a clear path forward, other than that I knew that the community was backing this place coming back.
You know, you mentioned coming up from Connecticut. I used to live in the Waterbury area of Connecticut back in the 90s, and I used to drive up to the Iron Horse all the time. And it's such a vivid memory. I one night, it was late 1998, I was at a Neil's show with a friend who told me about her friend that she'd like me to meet. And we met, and we decided to go on a date. And our first date a couple weeks later was a Solas concert at the Iron Horse. And our fourth date was a Maggie's show at the Iron Horse. And we've been married 24 years now, and the Iron Horse, I feel like, is a really important part of our story. And so do you feel like there's a lot of people that have similar accounts of what the place means to them?
Yeah, that's an amazing thing to hear. And I've heard similar stories from a lot of people. It makes me a little emotional when I hear those kinds of things, because it's just clearly meant so much to so many people. When we had some open houses when we first took on the lease of the space back in the fall, and allowed people to come in and look around, and there were a lot of people in tears with that didn't think they were gonna get to come back in. And so music is just such a powerful force that brings people together, that makes them feel connected to the other people that are seeing the same show, and in the end, that's the most important thing, and it's something that the Iron Horse has done in a way that very few venues around the country have been able to do. And so, yeah, it's a powerful thing for our community and for the people who have come and been lucky enough to witness shows there or to play shows there.
You're listening to Business Talk, a podcast presented by Business West. We're talking today with Chris Freeman, the executive director of the Parlor Room Collective. So what can people expect when the doors officially open on May 15th? How will the place be different? And how will it reflect what they remember about it?
Right. So, I mean, one of the amazing things about this project has been that there has been a long-term focus group that has happened sort of around the Iron Horse for a really long time. As we said, the music and the interaction between musicians and the audience, that is the core of what makes the place special, and that doesn't need to change. So, however, there were some other things, kind of facilities-wise, that really needed a needed some changes. So, we have people who have been to the Iron Horse before may remember that there were these two bathrooms in the basement that were shared by both artists and audience members. And so, one of the things, I played the Iron Horse probably 5 or 6 times and stood in line to the bathroom to my own show And so that was one thing that was clearly on everyone's mind, that we needed the bathrooms to become accessible and there needed to be more of them and they needed to be moved upstairs. So in order to do that, we are expanding the Iron Horse into the next storefront over. So it's another 1,200 square feet of space. We're moving the bar into that area and then putting 10 bathrooms in the back of that area. So now actually when people come in, they're going to enter through the door that's just to the left of the old main entrance. So the it'll be 18 Center Street is the main entrance. You'll enter into a bar area that can be open starting at around 4 o'clock or so before shows. Stay there rather than waiting out in the street, which was charming, I think, in some ways but also could be an improved experience. So people will come in there, be able to have a drink. We have an amazing restaurant partner in Dave Schreier of East Hampton's Daily Operation, who is a James Beard Award semifinalist chef. He's creating the menu and we're starting the restaurant with the same ethos of Daily Operation, so then there'll be two doors that will open up at around 6 o'clock, which allows us to extend sound check a little longer than it used to be able to be, and then folks will come inside, take their seats. But the venue itself, people should not expect a whole lot of change in that. We have a new HVAC system, which they won't see, but we'll have it'll be a much, much cleaner, safer space to be. And knowing coming out of the pandemic, we knew that that was a priority, a very expensive priority to get that up and running. But it'll be a healthy building with great food, brand new sound system, new lights, new furniture, slightly different layout of the furniture, but for the most part, the music and the interaction with the audience was never the problem, and that part won't change. The basement will be artist only, with a whole new green room that's going to be really nice. It'll have a shower for artists and everything too.
So speaking of all these expenses, let's talk about the campaign. What's the fundraising goal? How far along are you? And how can people still contribute and support it now?
So we're at $413,000 raised since we announced this project back in October, which is an amazing, amazing show of community support to be able to raise that kind of money so quickly. But our goal is $750,000. I think our construction costs are actually coming in a bit above that, as they tend to. We have some amazing partners on construction with D.A. Sullivan, who is donating a lot to the project. The whole general contracting of the whole project is donated by D.A. Sullivan. Wow. We also have Sunwood Builders, who are building the bar area, basically at cost, which is amazing. So we've probably turned a $1.2 million construction project into around $800,000. That being said, we really need to raise the money to be able to pay off our bills. It's going to be a the Capitol campaign will continue on past the opening on May 15th. It'll probably go through the end of the year. But you know, this is it's a powerful place, not only for the people who are coming, but also for the community at large. We've seen back when the Iron Horse and the Calvin and Pearl Street were all at their peak, Thorne's Marketplace in Northampton, which is the mall area, there stayed open 2 hours later than it does now. Mm-hmm. Restaurants could stay open a little bit later than they do now. So the economic development piece of having a place that's as legendary and nationally known as the Iron Horse, and where people are traveling from, like me, from Connecticut or from Vermont or Worcester or Albany, they're coming in and finding Northampton as a hub of music and art, which is what originally drew me to it. And the Iron Horse is a really big piece of that. And so whether you care about music and coming to see shows, or you care about the community development aspect of it, or you want commercial rents to go up, all of these things are things that can happen. Home values, everything can happen. And it I think in Northampton, even more than most communities, arts are the economic driver to our community. And yeah, but we got to pay off our bills. So we got 100,000 left to raise.
I'm glad you mentioned all that. I was just going to ask next about the economic impact, and really the impact of live music and the arts to the cultural life of a region, and to Northampton in particular. I think I talked to you recently. I know, forgive me if it wasn't you, but I you might have mentioned that Northampton for so long has really punched above its weight when it comes to such a small community, population wise, drawing really major acts over the decades as kind of a stop between New York and Boston. And just so I guess it's really important to sort of revive that and keep it going for that impact as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that in general, people in Northampton have some understanding of what kind of what a gift it is to have a place like the Iron Horse there. But I think when you look, I toured the country for 12 years with my band, and I played small towns and I played big cities, and I saw all sorts of different places. And Northampton is an outlier in so many ways. The fact that you can have a city of 29,000 people that can support music venues from, in the 90s, it was The Basement, The Iron Horse, Pearl Street, the Academy of Music, and the Calvin. When you think about those Friday, Saturday nights where all of those venues were humming, that's around 3,500 people who are buying tickets to come see shows in downtown Northampton. That is a humongous driver of what makes a downtown vibrant and unique. So to be able to have a place that can support venues that have a capacity of almost 10% of the entire population of the town does not happen anywhere else, and so I think it's something that has made Northampton a leader in the valley and a place that people want to move to, want to live, want to come to and visit. It's important.
Before we go, let's remind folks that they can check out the upcoming concert schedules at ironhorse.org and parlorroom.org for that venue. And there's also a tab on the Iron Horse site where they can read about supporting the restoration project, about donor levels, and how they can keep the momentum of the campaign going. Any final thoughts on that or anything else?
No, I mean, we have 65 shows booked already between May 15th and the end of the year, and there are countless shows still to come that we're in talks with artists on. So one of the really exciting things on this has been to see, it's been 4 years since the Iron Horse has been open, and we didn't really know if artists were gonna remember that this space and understand. And that has been, I've been completely blown away by the enthusiasm of artists to come back to this space. So we're having shows 5-6 nights a week at the Iron Horse, and it should be right back to the level of artists coming in that is really spectacular.
And that's all the time we have today. Thanks so much, Chris, for spending a few minutes with me today. This place is so important to me, and I'm so grateful to be able to chat with you about it and let people know what they can do to support it.
Thank you so much.
And thanks to all of you for tuning into Business Talk, a podcast presented by Business West. I'm Joe Bednar, the editor of Business West, and we'll see you next time.